you know, there's kind of a reasonable cross correlation.
That would help.
Okay.
It makes a difference if you go a kilometer up.
We are going to start with implementation issues. First, amendments to IS 28, and I give the floor to the discussion.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Agenda paper 12A discusses the proposed amendment to IS 28. The board discussed this issue last month. Paragraph 2 of the paper summarizes the board's tentative decisions. Among others, the board tentatively decided to set an effective date, 1st January 2019, with an early application permitted. The board also tentatively decided to require retrospective application of the amendments and provide transition requirements for entities that apply the amendments after they first apply IFRS 9. This agenda paper considers transition requirements for first-time adopters and due process steps. Our analysis of the transition requirements for first-time adopters is included in paragraphs 5 to 8 of the paper. IFRS 1 already includes exceptions to retrospective application relating to the classification and measurement of financial assets. Consequently, we don't think it's necessary to provide first-time adopters with any transition requirements other than those already included in IFRS 1. Question 1 on page 4 asks whether you agree with this analysis. Hand over to the board for discussion.
Can I just clarify the words you're using? Are we saying that you actually are suggesting that we should not provide additional transition reliefs? You're expressing it as requirements, which sounds like we should be asking them to do more. But I think what we're saying is that we don't want to give them any more relief than what they've got. Okay.
And therefore not write any particular requirements.
Correct.
And
that's a relief.
But it also sets out how it works, right? Mm. So that's the requirements as well.
Sometimes our requirements are a relief.
Sometimes, but not that often.
But not usually.
Happy?
Okay. Well, that's a quick one.
Do you want to vote?
Oh, one more.
Hey, do you want to vote?
Do you want to vote on that question?
Oh, four questions. My God.
Okay.
Yes?
Question one.
Yeah, question one.
The rest of the paper discusses the due process steps for the amendment size 28. Appendix A summarizes the due process steps taken. Questions relating to the due process steps are set out in page 5 of the paper.
Okay, so
go through one by one.
No re-exposure. No dissent.
I dissent.
Okay.
Main reason for my dissent is this amendment would require applying two standards to the same asset without considering double accounting. And actually, as a principle of accounting standard, one asset should be dealt with just one standard. That's why we need scoping. And I understand scoping is difficult to deal with in timely manner. However, that doesn't mean that we can force obvious double counting to one asset. And we could at least provide some guidance saying that if there is an obvious double counting, our entity can eliminate. We could do that by providing some threshold, higher of or lower of. But we didn't do that. So I don't think we did our best. That's why I'm going to dissent.
Okay, thank you. Other dissents? No? Permission to ballot?
Everybody?
Good. Then we go to Javid. I didn't pronounce your name correctly, I understand. Javid or Javid?
Javid.
Javid, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We will move on to agenda paper 12B on accounting policy changes. The paper explores possible alternatives to the challenges posed by the requirements in IS 8 for voluntary changes in accounting policies, in particular changes resulting from agenda decisions. At the interpretation committee's meeting last week, We asked committee members to provide feedback on matters included in this paper. We posted an addendum to paper 12B earlier this week. That paper summarizes feedback we received from the committee members. Applying IS 8 and entity changes in accounting policy retrospectively, if the change is either required by IFRS standards or it results in financial statements providing reliable but more relevant information, what I will refer to as a voluntary change in an accounting policy. Now, an entity applies a voluntary change in an accounting policy retrospectively unless it is impracticable to do so. Impracticable is a very high threshold. When the board or the committee develop new standards or amend any existing requirements, they specifically consider transition and often provide relief from some aspects of retrospective application, usually for cost-benefit considerations. However, this same relief is not available to entities that wish to voluntarily change an accounting policy. This can be seen as creating a barrier for entities wishing to adopt better accounting policies. We understand one of the more common reasons why entities voluntarily change an accounting policy is because of agenda decisions published by the Interpretations Committee. Now, because agenda decisions are non-authoritative, any change that results from an agenda decision is not one that is required by IFRS standards. Accordingly, unless the resulting change is the correction of an error, an entity applies this change as a voluntary change in an accounting policy. Neither the board nor the committee can specify any transition requirements or an effective date for changes resulting from a gender decision. This can be problematic in some situations, and that's because A, the benefits of retrospective application may not always outweigh the cost, and this could deter some entity from submitting questions to the committee. And secondly, the committee may recommend standard setting solely for transition concerns. In the paper, we first analyze whether the board should consider whether a change resulting from an agenda decision is the correction of an error or a voluntary change in an accounting policy. Our analysis is included in paragraph 15 to 23 of the paper. We recommend that the board should not undertake standard setting on this matter. Committee members who expressed their views agreed with our recommendation. The paper then goes on to analyze one possible solution to address the transition challenges. We are not aware of any concerns regarding the requirements in IS 8 for correction of errors. For this reason, we did not consider any alternative that would suggest a change to the requirement for correction of errors. Appendix A to the paper also outlines another alternative we considered but did not pursue. We think one possible solution could involve lowering the impracticability threshold to a cost-benefit threshold. The board could amend IS 8 to require entities to apply this threshold either to all voluntary changes in accounting policies or only to voluntary changes that result from agenda decisions. These two alternatives are outlined in paragraphs 28 and 29 of our paper, and paragraphs 30 to 44 provide a comparative analysis of these two alternatives. On balance, we are recommending that the board amend IS 8 to apply the lower threshold to changes in accounting policies resulting from agenda decision, what is alternative 2 in the paper. Feedback from committee members at their meeting last week is summarized in paragraph 6 to 11 of the paper, of the addendum paper, sorry. As noted in paragraph 6 and 7 of the addendum, committee members had mixed views on which alternative to apply. In addition, some members said it might be difficult to assess the benefits of providing information on a retrospective basis. With that, I would like to turn it over to you for discussion and ask for your comments or questions that you may have. After the discussion, I will then ask you to vote on the questions which are on page 16 of the paper. Thank you.
Thanks for this paper. I think this is actually exactly what we need to help us with agenda decisions at the Interpretations Committee. I think it would be really helpful to have some guidance like this, because so often the discussion at the Interpretation Committee starts to turn on the transition impacts of agenda decisions, even when people have agreed that the requirements are clear. So I think it's something that would be really helpful, and I think it's also consistent with us trying to still make a very careful decision about whether standard setting is required by the Interpretation Committee or not, but where there are agenda decisions talking more about what, you know, the requirements of the standards say. So I think there's an increasing need for some clarity on what the effect is. I don't feel terribly strongly about whether it would be alternative one or alternative two. I do. Maybe one issue that did come up at the Interpretations Committee, which was interesting, which we didn't touch on in the staff proposals, was how quickly you need to apply a voluntary change in policy if an agenda decision is published, and a concern that if we come out with an agenda decision just before, you know, the 30th of June, does that mean that you have to apply that voluntary change in policy for your interim financials? Personally, I think that sounds like quite a tough thing to do, and maybe one benefit of focusing particularly on agenda decisions would be that maybe we could also think about whether there was something we could say about what our sort of expectations might be about how quickly people should be required to act. And I don't know if that's even possible or feasible, but that might be one reason to focus on that subset.
If it's voluntary.
It's sort of voluntary, except some securities regulators get very excited about them, so it's not quite so voluntary. On the test, I agree with reducing the threshold. The committee members raised, I think, some good points about how difficult it might be to quantify benefits and what sort of standards of sort of documentation and visibility or verification you might need of what those benefits are in that assessment, which makes me wonder whether a focus maybe on undue cost or effort might be as a better way to go than an explicit cost-benefit analysis. Because I think, for me, undue cost or effort, you still need to think about context, so you're still sort of not so explicitly, but you're still thinking about what the benefits are or what you're spending the money on. And the silly example I used to try and explain to the staff yesterday what I meant was, if I tell you I spent £500, you can't tell me whether that was an undue cost or not unless I tell you I spent it on getting my hair cut. Then you'll have a view on whether that's an undue cost or not. So the nature of what we're requiring them to do from the change in agenda decision would be something you'd be thinking about when you decided whether it was an undue cost or not. So I think it sort of has a sort of a benefits flavour to it, but without it being so explicit, and maybe that would make it easier for people to apply.
Stephen.
I'm not going to support this. I feel that when we do standards and accounting policy changes that result, we assess cost benefits. And it's an imprecise process, but we then make the decision about transition and we give cost relief and we talk about prospective or not adjusting comparators. If I understand this correctly, this puts the entire onus of cost benefit on the preparer. And they will then make an assertion about the cost versus benefit in their particular case. And we could end up with situations where different companies are doing different things, they assess it differently. And for companies that are minded to do so, it opens up a pretty easy path to not applying retrospectively, doing a cumulative catch-up, not having restated comparatives, you know, the whole range of different things which are possible at the moment under IAS 8. IS8 has the impracticable hurdle, which I accept is high, maybe undue cost and effort, perhaps that might do it, but I'm still nervous about that, because how do you assess undue? And that presumably implies some sort of assessment of the benefits. So I'm very nervous about this from an investor perspective, particularly option one. Of applying to everything. I mean, maybe agenda decisions wouldn't be quite so bad, but I also question how important this is. Now, I haven't done much research on this, but I was at a conference recently and I presented this idea and I spoke to just a couple of people, but they did say this is not a big issue. Now, I accept that the Interpretations Committee has come out with a different answer on that, so maybe there needs to be more work, and maybe an exposure process will reveal the answer to that. But I don't think I'm going to support this.
So can I ask you, Steve, and I know that we're not necessarily there yet, and we'll get to talk about, you know, what amount of application guidance or not, you know, we think we might need if we were to do it. But are you just, are you kind of saying your starting point is there's no amount of application guidance that could be written that would provide enough rigour when the basis is that entities would be making that cost benefit?
Yeah, if the company says to the auditor, this is going to be expensive, how do you argue against it? And effectively, it'll be the ability to declare retrospective restate comparatives, don't restate comparatives, I'll only do it prospectively, I won't apply it to past. Effectively, you get that choice, I think, because you can just assert, and maybe some is obvious that it's not really very...
It would not be restating
Hume cat.
There's a tiered process, so you don't automatically go to prospective just because...
I agree, and that there's a tiering of... Yep. But I think you could pretty quickly move through the tiering on a cost-benefit basis in order to apply prospective application. So I'm worried that lack of comparability, for one thing, so I think we'll have several different transition approaches applied by different people because of their cost-benefit assertion.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting, I'm sorry, I'll just make this comment only to be helpful to others if it is, and then move on, is that what's interesting is I think that some of the concerns raised by some of the committee members was almost the other way when they talked about the benefits leg. They were saying, how is an entity going to demonstrate that? It's almost, they're going to have to go through so much work to prove and demonstrate that the costs sort of significantly outweigh the benefits.
There you go.
Just a different perspective.
I think it's going to be impossible for them to say the costs are higher than
yeah.
Which is the opposite of what Steve's saying.
Interesting.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that I welcome this initiative, and I also I welcome that we look into the issue and we tackle this problem. And thank you for the paper because it helps thinking the issue through. However, I'm not going to support the direction that is taken. I think it has too many different aspects to it that I do not support. The first one, in fact, is that I do not support pushing the cost benefit, whether it's a new cost of effort or cost benefit, in fact, analysis to preparers, especially not when this is subsequent to an agenda of the IFRIC. And the other aspect that I do not support is the fact of saying, well, we know that in practice, the practice has settled that most agenda decisions are dealt with as voluntary changes. But we do know that this, in fact, is a practice and not necessarily consistent with what the standard says. And I think we need to establish the consistency of what we are doing. We say an agenda decision is a clarification, educational by nature, it's not authoritative, and for that reason it's not authoritative. But nevertheless, an agenda decision eliminates a possible practice that generally has been established of how a standard was applied. And if this is an elimination, it means, and you don't need any standard other standard setting activity to eliminate it, it means that in the first place it was not authorized, or in the first place it was not compliant. And you have the definition of a prior period error that includes misuse of an accounting policy. So if you read ICE 8, you necessarily go to that definition, and the standard setter itself has assessed that this practice was not compliant. That's the reason why you have an agenda decision and not a standard setting exercise, another standard setting exercise. And we don't want to go there. But First thing, if you want to change something, an element of consistency is to address that inconsistency, either in the definition of the correction of an error or in another way. Then the second inconsistency, in my view, is to call that voluntary. If we do all this exercise, it is to foster consistent application of IFRS. So we hope that regulators are going to be on our side in order to have IFRS applied as the agenda decision says, because otherwise we wouldn't do it, or we would do it a different way. So the regulators that do their job in accompanying us as much as possible in our efforts impose those changes. So we have to acknowledge and be honest in saying what we do here, we are hoping that this is going to be imposed. As a result, personally, I see that our due process, I mean, that the way our due process is written and what we do with things does not necessarily allow that to be immediate, but we can also have that evolve if necessary. But as a minimum, I think an agenda decision could include that, of course, it's not going to have transition requirements, but it could suggest that if a change has to be made to benefit from this education exercise, then this is what it would entail. And so the judgment about the cost-benefit issue would still be in-house. The other point that I disagree with is to, in the current practice, is to leave, because the standard says one thing and the practice is developed in another one, basically we delegate to auditors and regulators to decide without having the basis of a standard, so purely judgment on what basis, I don't know, whether it is an error or a voluntary change. And so they have their own judgment. For example, one auditor told me the other day, well, if the IFRIC has considered view A and view B, and I'm in practice C, or practice C would be an error because it's not being considered. So you see, it can open the door to whatever judgment practice people want. And I don't think that's fair. So, and finally, I think we have the objective of writing simple and understandable standards. So even if we are solving a problem in practice, and of course this should be our foremost objective, I think we still have to carry, and I think it's really the board having that responsibility of, even if a wording that is not simple or not so understandable could, because we share with sufficient people around us hope that it finally will be understood in that manner, I think we have to carry that responsibility with ourselves and not accept that we support a practice which is not consistent with what we have written.
Can I just respond on how you think about agenda decisions and how I would like us to be able to think about agenda decisions? And I think one of the challenges we have is that what we might like to think and what the world thinks could be two different things, and we've got a bit of a... So I know lots of people hold your view in terms of, you know, if we've issued it and you talk about A, B and not C, then you've got errors and all of these sort of consequences. I guess my concern is the more that we try and say that they're authoritative, the more it's going to be difficult for us to use agenda decisions when we should be using them, because we've concluded that the words are already clear, but we think it's helpful for people to point out, because, you know, read paragraph A, B and C and therefore, and we're trying to just help people pull it together. But I think what we're trying to do, and the reason why I like this idea, is to encourage us a way of thinking about our principles-based standards, which is that we know that in some cases, even though, you know, we get a group of experts in the room and they all conclude to them the words are clear, and we go out of our way not to ever sort of imply there's errors, but we want to sort of encourage people to think about agenda decision as being a new piece of information
So it's something new that they didn't have available to them last year. So it's not an error question in that situation. It's a new piece of information that helps us improve practice as we go along. Because I think what we have to try and get and embedded, and particularly with all of these new standards, is we know when people first apply IFRS 9, for example, everything they're doing won't be the perfect application of IFRS 9. It's not going to be the perfect application of IFRS 16, et cetera, et cetera. And we don't want to come along with our sort of interpretation committee and say, you were wrong, you're in trouble, this is bad. But I think where we can help people is say, okay, this is what we meant, this is a new piece of information for you to use, and going forward, let's improve practice. And I think this is intended to try and encourage that type of thinking.
And if I may respond, I mean, and that's the reason why I'm supporting the effort. But I think it has to be done in a different manner. I fully support
I didn't really understand what your different manner was, though, to be honest.
Well, I've not necessarily stated what the solution is, but I think it has to be studied in order to be consistent. Either, I mean, there are various possibilities. You can modify the definition of correction of an error. You can state in the standard that taking advantage of an agenda decision is a voluntary change, but then it captures everything. And you know, when I hear that whether it is an error or a voluntary change depends on facts and circumstances, I disagree. I mean, how to apply an accounting policy depends on facts and circumstances, but how to read a standard does not depend on facts and circumstances. So you first have to read, understand, and then you apply your judgment to facts and circumstances. But when I hear, oh no, whether it's an error or a voluntary change, it depends on facts and circumstances, I can't agree.
So is there never an error?
I think that's the challenge.
We have to make clear decisions on what we want. If we want to, if the issue is we want this agenda decision to be as effective as possible, as easy as possible, maybe the cost of it is that once in every 5 years, there may be an error which is going to be called a voluntary change. It will be applied, I mean, in terms of financial information, it's not going to be very different. And I do not accept also that when we have new information, as stated in the standard, is new information on the entity, on the transactions, on the substance that has to be reflected. I don't think it was beforehand understood as new communication from the standard setter.
If this process would never result in an error, then this would be an open door to bring everything to IFRS.
That'll just be
to clean up your act without penalty.
It's unworkable.
I mean, if it's helpful, paragraph 17 in the paper really tries to, I suppose, sum up a lot of what you were saying, Sue, about how we view agenda decisions, because, you know, we're in this place where we've hopefully got an interpretations process that we hope was helpful. That's the point in it being there. There's a mechanism that when people are out there applying standards that are mostly already effective, that if there's simply a question that comes up, you know, that having discussed broadly and widely, we have got a mechanism in place that means people can submit questions to us. Equally, how that's evolved over time is, of course, that's, you know, a long time ago, whenever the conclusion from the committee looking at a particular issue was that they thought that what was in the requirements was sufficient, provided an adequate basis, there was just one sentence that said it provides an adequate basis. Where, of course, then a lot of our stakeholders said, well, that's all fine and well, great, but maybe you could help us and tell us, you know, exactly how it's so clear. So I think we've had a lot of feedback to say, well, even when we reach that conclusion, and by the way, just to clarify what we say, we never actually say in these the words are crystal clear. We have a phrase where we talk about the principles and requirements providing an adequate basis for an entity to account for, in a sense. But we've been told, and what we now try to do is we think that we are being as helpful as we can be to the market by, in the cases where the committee has decided it provides an adequate basis, that we then point to the relevant sort of parts of our requirements, etc., to do that. And I suppose that's all I'm saying is that in paragraph 17, I suppose, of the paper, that's where we, you know, where we're trying to get that balance. Because, of course, the counter to that, I think the way around it, is either we decide to not be helpful again, in a sense, go back to saying if a question comes in and we think the words are enough, then we don't say anything, or we go the other way, which I think our stakeholders absolutely would not like as well, and we propose numerous changes to our literature every time a question comes in. And I think, again, the feedback around our, you know, consultations, etc., would say that that's not what our stakeholders would want us to do as well, especially when we're trying to maintain sort of principle-based nature of our standards.
Daryl?
So I agree in general with the direction that you're taking here. I think it's based on the fact that I do believe in practice, and I've seen in practice that agenda decisions do change accounting. And in some cases, they're intended to do that. When Francois was talking at the beginning, I thought what her one of the suggestions might be that in making agenda decisions, the IFRIC actually considers or at least discusses the transitional elements. But for me, I think in and maybe this comes to the point you were making, Petrina, I think one of the things we want to make these agenda decisions is helpful, but quick and timely. So to get them out, to make them efficient, to get them out there, and I think getting into the transitional debate is actually likely to slow that process down. I also think that the transitional debate is very often a blunt tool. When Stephen was talking earlier, he mentioned that as a transition discussion, we as the board make this type of cost-benefit type of discussion. But I think in essence we tend to, or we would normally tend to lean to be a bit generous. We're considering the weaker side of things rather than where everybody's likely to come out. Pushing the cost-benefit discussion down to individual company level means that you're considering your own facts. It means some who might not have got relief otherwise will now get relief, but it means many who could have just benefited from the relief because it was simply there will now actually have to go through an exercise to consider it. So I think it's right. I think we would say, I think these do cause changes in the accounting, and I think we would very often have decided to give transitional relief if we had applied our normal threshold approach or our normal thought approach. I think we're correct not to get into the issue of errors. I think the error issue is a whole new complication thing. There is already practice that's developed around deciding whether these are errors or changes in policy. And I think I'm certainly think we can be comfortable in leaving that practice in place, perhaps for part of a bigger project at some point in the future. I struggled a bit, and I think a little bit like Sue, I struggled a little bit in the alternative one versus alternative two approach. On the one hand, I think that the advantage of alternative two is that there is no real choice as to timing. Once an agenda decision is made, you have to react to that agenda decision. The improvement comes through relatively quickly. If I'm thinking about pure voluntary changes, I can pick the time that gives me the best outcome, the outcome I most like. And so I am concerned a little bit about going down alternative one approach there. On the other hand, though, and I think it comes back to words that Sue used earlier about new information, I think new information doesn't only come from agenda decisions, and I disagree a little bit with what Francois said there. I think companies are constantly getting new information about what their competitors are doing, what their regulator requires, what the preferred practices that they're hearing from their users. That causes them, sometimes as an industry as a whole, to improve the practice over time. I think there's two types of changes that happen. Those are driven by external factors, by the regulator, by common usage in a particular jurisdiction, by user requests or user preferences, and then those that are simply made because I figure I can get better accounting over time if I go down an approach. In an ideal world, it's that split that I would like to differentiate between, driven by outside versus driven by purely inside considerations. Inside considerations, I have total control over timing. I think I should be required to do fully retrospective. External drivers, I think I haven't got much control over timing, and I think this relief would be useful. But I think it's going to be really hard for us to go down that route. So all told, I'm probably comfortable with where alternative two lands us. So narrow scope just for agenda decisions in terms of the process. In paragraph 51, you set out a bit of guidance around how we would think about the terms cost and benefits. I am a little bit nervous about that guidance, only because I think these kinds of terms, be it undue cost and effort or cost benefit, are things that we use elsewhere. And I think we just need to be aware that if we introduce guidance here as to what those words mean, potentially we impact changes on other practices, so that suddenly other standards may have to, people may have to make voluntary changes in other standards in order to reflect better what our words are. So I think let's just think about using those, that terminology. The last point I'd make is just around undue cost and effort. For those of you who may remember this is a term that we use in IFRS for SMEs. It was originally introduced in IFRS for SMEs just as that term. It was one of the first questions we got asked in IFRS for SMEs is, what does that term mean? And we had to provide exactly the type of guidance we're talking about here, that to Sue's hairdresser thing, I have to consider what the other side of the equation is. That was built into a Q&A at the first instance in the SME standard, and then at the last set of changes we did, at a full board level, we actually introduced direct information about how you think about undue cost and effort, and that there is a benefit side to it. I never think that we should be looking too hard at the SME stuff, because clearly it's intended for a different market, but some of the discussion there might provide help in just thinking about what term makes sense here.
Martin.
Yeah, I support that, but I'm also struck it should be used alternative one or two, and I think we should go for alternative one, because I think the situations which we have, like interchangeable decisions, we have also in other circumstances, and I don't see a rationale why we should, if we give this relief to one and not to the other. And also I thought was what was described here in the interpretation committee, that if we doing it only for a gender decision, maybe that could have the impression by some people that, okay, that is authoritative guidance behaviors. We have it in this in our standard and saying that is something special compared to other policy changes. And so overall, I would then support alternative one, so doing it for all kind of voluntary changes.
Mary.
I'm going to go back for a minute to some of Francoise's comments, and in many ways very attracted to much of her analysis about the situation we're in, because rigorous analysis going back to the basics and the standard is exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about the analysis that supports agenda decisions. But then I step back and I think about, but what are we trying to accomplish? And in a world of imperfect human beings, applying this sometimes. We have to create some safety valves, because I think the overall objective that's in this and that we're facing elsewhere, especially as we go into a period of adoption of a number of major standards and a whole lot of change, is how do we keep the system flexible enough to keep getting improvements without winding up the whole standard setting machine, and for people to learn from each other and get smarter collectively, and how do we strike the right balance of giving tools and encouragement, while also still addressing some of the things that Steve raised in terms of comparability, et cetera. So I think it's a really difficult thing. Now, Petrina, I started sitting up as straight as I always should, but straighter than I usually do, when you started talking about how we never say it's perfectly clear and it's narrow. And I think that's true given the facts of what has been submitted and come to the Interpretation Committee to date. I think there, at least in theory, is the ability for the committee to say, basically, this submission, it describes an inappropriate application of IFRS. The requirements are sufficiently clear. That's an error. And so that's, I think we have to remind people that's an important screening mechanism that the staff and the Interpretation Committee perform before they get to the more typical kind of, that dreadful word, educative, agenda decisions that talks about the analysis. And I do think the agenda decision, and it's not the decision itself, but it's the process that leads to the committee concluding, A, standard setting isn't needed, because when you put the collective wisdom of the different people at Interpretation Committee along with the very substantial work of the staff, you get insights that you might not have had before. So I buy into this notion that the agenda decision itself can be seen as a new piece of information in the mix when you're assessing things. And I think about an issue that was considered at the June meeting on how you do purchase price allocation, if it's not a business. I know that issue. I've seen pitch battles over it for many years, and I think the work that the staff did, and you know, from discussions with the interpretation committee, finally led to a now there's a much better insight into how it all fits together that a lot of really bright people over the years hadn't been able to come to in smaller groups. So I think there is real progress made through the discussion, and so I think we should be doing something, and I think this is the right kind of initiative. I tend to say, and maybe this is my inner control freak, let's experiment with changes for voluntary changes that relate to agenda decisions, in part because of their characteristic of that is a new piece of information. And I think we have to maybe be a bit more open. This is kind of moving away from the rigorous analysis point, but a bit more open of the agenda decisions are not authoritative, but they do have some special status because there's a discussion in our due process handbook about limited consultation over both the decision not to add something and what kind of commentary is added. They're incorporated into our green book specifically, cross-referenced, et cetera. So it's a very defined population, and there's a lot of stakeholder engagement in it. The two things that have come out to me so far, but I'm not dead set on that, I tend to veer more towards cost-benefit than undue cost and effort. I accept Steve's concern that pushes down to an individual entity level an assessment of cost and benefits. But first of all, we heard from some of the preparers around the interpretation committee table that their inclination is to do retrospective whenever possible because it's so much easier to use the financials to explain if you have consistency. I think the biggest risk of abuse is actually getting all the way to saying it's only applied prospectively to new transactions after X date. And I think that's where we particularly have to focus on building the hurdles to getting to that conclusion. I've heard that, and I think we also I'd like the staff to think further about this issue of how fast you have to react. Interpretation committee met last week. I think they'll publish the update this week, today, yesterday. June 20-something, June 30th interim half years. Do you have to scramble in something that got published? Now, it's not without zero notice because, agenda decisions are published as drafts several months before the interpretation committee finalizes. But it's a pretty fast reaction time, and I would tend to think it's appropriate to expect it for the beginning of the next annual period and the beginning of the next annual period rather than January 1st because you haven't issued June 30th yet. So these are things that I think are in the mix, and I want to do something and I'd like to do it as soon as possible. Having said that, I think this is one where we have to make sure we're bringing everybody along with us, and maybe not just on the basis of an ED, but in terms of some broader consultation before we get to an ED, because I think people want to get some of this help, but if they're we need to get them thinking about the issues in advance before dropping a set of proposals. So, good to do it, supportive of the effort, think it's broadly the right way, even if it's not conceptually pure in terms of some of the analysis. I think we've already crossed that bridge when we say, here's the due process for agenda decisions, but blah, blah, blah. And I think we can maybe talk a bit more about how people use them in practice and our objective of continuing to deliver improvements to the application of IFRS at the appropriate cost. It's kind of our own cost-benefit analysis.
I must say, I find it a clear sign of the idiosyncrasy, or perhaps excessiveness of our due process, that we hesitate to call these agenda decisions authoritative. Because there is an IFRIC and approved by the board.
No, not
who said no.
Not agenda decision. We oversee the process.
Well, okay, all right. But still, in practice, of course, they are authoritative.
treat it as.
Personal view of how.
But in practice they will be. But of course, otherwise, yeah, we would have to go through the through a lengthier process.
We already have appropriate due process.
The system doesn't want that level of cost attached to it.
No, I understand.
And so that's not what people are asking for.
In certain circumstances, our due process is excessively costly, and then we try to avoid it. Anyway, Amaru.
Thanks, Hans. I think I'm the same route as Mary and Martin, just add some points. And I would first say that we do need to do something, because with that I'm very much agreed. And this, to me, is because of the origins of these discussions in the interpretation committee. If they come to the interpretation committee, it's because they are inconsistent application. So, and we do fight for consistency in the application of IFRS. So if we do accept that there is some inconsistency, and it's better for us to seek the best way to communicate how this should be applied, I think we need to do something. In that said, I would just say that between the alternatives, I'm aligned much more with alternative one. I think is the most practical way to do that, and it's the best way to be really helpful. On the non-authoritative, it's important to notice that in our constitution it's believed to be so, but in practice I agree with Hans, regulators are looking at this, and auditors, and of course preparers and users, and they see that as well as the final wording on how to apply. Well, all that said, I would just suggest two things then. One is to really think about how to give more prominence to these agenda decisions, because we do report after the IFRIC meeting in our website. So because we do intend to be more helpful, I think one way I see as giving more prominence is just collect all, and every 6 months or so make them available in a specific report on agenda decisions, or do it annually in order to people to really follow what was decided. I think this will bring a big benefit in terms of consistency in application in all these issues.
Good point. Firstly, Steve mentioned that, you know, that some of your friends say not big issue, big issue. I would say that any issue put to us are big issues, because different part of the world you put issue to us, you know, if not big issue, they will not come to us. And secondly, I will not support anything in relation to warrant changes in accounting policies, nothing not related to agenda decision. And certainly, I fully agree with Sue and Mary about improvement from the agenda decision and the process. And I think it is very important for us to enhance consistent applications of our standards through agenda decision and through the discussion of the process. And I remember 2-3 years ago when we had a meeting with IFRIC members, and Tony from PwC particularly mentioned this, you know, like TRG discussions, agenda decision, to some extent is very similar. And as to whether we should do something, I personally will not support to do anything, you know, either alternative one or alternative two. And I don't want to say that, you know, we should not follow the agenda decision. You know, huge improvement will automatically result in. But in reality, the situation sometimes quite complicated. You know, as a regulator for 10 years, I sometimes enforce the agenda decision in different ways for different reasons. you know. And of course, most of the time, you know, we require the company to, or you support the company to retrospectively apply the agenda decision. But in some other cases, you know, I will also support to apply agenda decision in some circumstances prospectively. And once in China, there is a big, you know, improvement in financial reporting as a result of my decision to apply prospectively. The story is like this. You know, for many years, the Chinese company have to provide a gap reconciliation if they publish their shares internationally or locally. But in 2002, you know, our corporate finance division report to me said, you know, they found many of the changes, so-called changes in accounting standards, is actually not changes in accounting standards. It's actually changes in accounting choice or changes in accounting estimates, and not nothing to do with standards. And actually, they account for maybe 7% of so-called gap difference. And we finally, after serious discussion, decide we should eliminate such a mode practice. Then the question is, you know, whether we should require them retrospectively change or not. And originally, the standard said they want retrospectively change and as a collection of errors. And by the end, you know, I didn't agree. And by the end, everyone agreed with my view. That is, I said, you know, if we do so, we insist to do so, then some company may not want to change on different reasons. And if we can, you know, force as a prospective changes may improve the practice forever. And by the end, I win. And from that year, the gap difference significantly decreased, I think more than 80%. You can check the historical result. So it is quite complicated. And in some cases, you know, in particular country may not want change, even though we had a agenda decision. One case is like Francois just mentioned. We discussed two situations. There is a third alternative, a third practice. For some reasons, we not discussed. And whether the third one should be considered as an error or not. And in that environment, controversy will still be there. And then people say the agenda decision is not authoritative. Therefore, you know, people don't want change. There is a possibility. So as a result, I don't think we should do anything, you know. It is, you know, it will automatically result in improvement. But something we want to do may not, you know, help.
Thanks. I'd like to make four points. First of all, over the last year or two, I've been reviewing quite a lot of the drafts, the narrow scope amendments and other things as well. And in quite a few cases, it struck me that it is obvious that retrospective application would be of no use to anybody, no benefit whatsoever, really. And the retrospective application wouldn't pass the cost-benefit test. But it's mainly because of the lack of benefits. It's not necessarily because of excessive cost. It's just that the benefit is probably zero, or possibly even negative in some cases, I suspect. And so I think if we do go down the undue cost and effort route or the cost-benefit route, I think it would be worth trying to emphasise that it's mainly about the lack of benefits rather than about the excessive cost. And that's where I put more emphasis on the guidance. I had actually been wondering for a while whether we should think about exploring an amendment to IS 8 anyway to try and eliminate retrospective application in some of the cases where it's clear it's not going to work. But that's obviously a bigger and longer project.
But undue cost will not get us there. Well, it's still cost benefit then that you...
That's right. And I will put the focus on the lack of benefit, as I said. The second thing, I wonder if maybe for the agenda decisions, if we do put the emphasis on lack of benefit from retrospective application, if maybe there might be a way in at least some agenda decisions to build in something that gives people some help with the assessment of whether retrospective is likely to provide useful information or not. I know that's difficult because that would depend a bit what people's starting point was, and so it might be too difficult to do, but I think it might be worth thinking about whether there's anything we can build into the agenda decision itself to help with the thought process. The third point on the choice between the two alternatives, I guess I've got a question what we mean by resulting from the agenda decision, because it might be somebody who's got exactly the same question as the agenda decision, or it might be somebody who's got an obvious analogy, or it might be somebody who's a bit further away. And so I suspect we'll get some questions at least by exactly what we mean about resulting from an agenda decision. And the fourth point I wanted to make is this point about the publication lags. It's difficult for us to do anything directly, of course, but it's obviously impractical to suggest that people should be monitoring our website every day to see whether we're putting things out, and then they've got to apply them straight away. And there's obviously got to be some reasonable lag before somebody would expect them to apply them. Yeah. Now, that's not really in our control, but I think any messaging we can give on that would be helpful.
Tak.
Thank you. I strongly support staff's recommendation, and all we want to do is to encourage the voluntary change in order to achieve a consistent application. But what's happening in the world is preparers hesitate to submit to IFRIC. Actually, I would say there would be hypothetically more divergence. It's hidden because preparers hesitate to submit. I would like to encourage preparers to submit more and to be discussed in the IFRIC meeting. And I support alternative two. Of course, you know, if we go down the path of alternative one, we could encourage more, but we need some discipline. And IFRIC decision is somehow good information, as Sue pointed out, because we have a good intensive discussion, and it's also screened by public consultation, 20 days or something. And it is not subject to board decision. Sorry?
60 days.
Oh, sorry, 60. It's not subject to board decision, but it is reported to the board. So board can know what the IFRIC decision is all about. So
effectively improve.
Yeah. So actually, this is the clear evidence of environmental change, which could encourage preparers to make a voluntary accounting policy change. And I strongly support the suggestion made by Amaro. I think we should make the agenda decision more prominent, and we should make the process of agenda process more prominent, so that to encourage preparers to submit their problem. And that would encourage the, you know, our motivation for the consistent application.
Yeah. We agree. Chang Wu.
You're looking at Martin pointing to this. Something.
Yeah, but that's
my policy of dividing the board. And
I would like to say thank you for trying to resolve this issue. This issue is quite, you know, serious issue in interpretation committee and for many, you know, stakeholders. I generally agree with their approach too. However, we need to build up a kind of a monitoring mechanism. This approach is not to be used by a kind of a opportunistic in a try by companies. If any company would like to make a progressive application, they will send a submission to us by just one click of email. Then they can use progressive application rather than retrospective application. So as Mary said, there are many types of agenda decisions. Some are quite closely, you know, close to the kind of a new accounting, you know, standards, you know, on us. Some others are very educational material. Some are, you know, between these two. So basically, there are some agenda decisions that are quite close to the new accounting standard that must be authoritative. I think, but we are not saying this is authority, but on those, with those kind of agenda decisions, many countries are saying they are authoritative. For example, the US, you know, maybe they have some kind of similar agenda decision as ours. They think this is a kind of authoritative, and every their decision with the transfer requirements of issue date. So that's one example. And based on my experience in South Korea, whenever we have issued this kind of answer to questions, that's authoritative. You have to provide some kind of a transition requirement and issue date with this kind of an answer, even though if the answer is very serious. So if we can have build up some kind of a monitoring mechanism to prevent some kind of abuse of this approach too, then I'm okay. However, if we cannot build that monitoring mechanism, it's very serious. But there is a pure, a good guys, a good companies there. They are going to make a really pure a query to us without any kind of opportunistical idea. It's okay. However, I guess if you just provide this approach too without any monitoring mechanism, the pure voluntary change will disappear. Mm. Unfortunately. Everybody will try to utilize our different accounting treatments on the pure voluntary change and some kind of voluntary change from agenda decision. Different accounting treatments always invite some opportunistic behavior from markets. Mm. So this is that exception. You know, if we just provide this one, there is a kind of some cause, some distortion in markets. So that's what I'm saying. So anyway, this is an issue, but we have been trying to maybe hiding out the issue without a good answer approach. So anyway, this is a really well written paper, and you raised a very good issue, but the solution might not be perfect yet. So I think we need to improve that solution, then we can resolve this issue that was or has been raised in many years.
Okay, Stephen.
Sorry, yeah. I was just going to clarify.
Chung Wei,
if it's okay, just to say, are you kind of, if I understood what you were saying, are you kind of supportive of the direction of potentially alternative one?
Oh, two.
But you think we should?
We should go to the alternative two, but with some monitoring mechanism, like the committee may separate. This is a time zero. Agenda type, agenda decision. This is just purely educative material. So you can apply a kind of a cost benefit threshold. There are different types you can make a classification of our agenda decisions, depending on the content of the agenda decisions. There are very easy ones, there are difficult ones. The impact is so huge.
Can I check? I think today, an analysis, an assessment that goes on that's not very visible, is the staff considering the alternatives and limiting the alternatives discussed in the paper to those that seem to have some basis, some legitimacy, even if ultimately there's a conclusion that it's harder to read the standards that way when you put together all the literature. So I think there is that screening going on now behind the scenes. And it's not secret. It's just it happens in the preparation of the papers to weed out those things that are not valid, and therefore you're not kind of giving people forgiveness for errors. So I think that's happening already. Is that the kind of assessment of the type of submission you were thinking about?
I that kind of assessment is necessary. However, we forget that the correction of errors cases. That's not an issue. Correction of error must be applied the way of retrospective.
Yeah.
That's perfect. And some voluntary change should be applied in a retrospective way. Otherwise, the companies can manage any numbers. But this is a special case. Some agenda decisions, actually, they are a kind of a new amendment or a new interpretation. Sometimes, I had some kind of experience. For example, based on the committee decision, we said, for example, uncertain tax position. We didn't say anything, actually, by agenda decision. This is a probability threshold must be applied when you recognize something as an asset. What I'm saying is many countries are using that kind of practice, but some countries have been applied the IS 37 or higher threshold whole country. So it's a kind of big impact of our agenda decision to those countries.
That was not an agenda.
That was an interpretation.
Well, interpretation, that is only on how to measure. We didn't think about anything on the recognition. That interpretation was coming.
The interpretation just recently published does talk about...
Yeah, that interpretation has nothing on the recognition issue, right?
No, it does.
It does?
Yes, it talks about the recognition.
Look at that again, please.
That threshold.
Yeah. We use a probable threshold to assess when you recognize the effects of the insurgent.
We have that kind of... So anyway, in that case it's okay, but I thought that interpretation talking about the measurement rather than recognition.
But
that's maybe a wrong example, but there are many things, many agenda decisions have a really big impact on some jurisdictions. So that's what I'm saying, we need to separate these agenda decisions, types of agenda decisions. Now we cannot say every agenda decision, voluntary change, you just apply the retrospective. No. So using that more on a cost-benefit threshold. Another thing is this is a technical thing, is if you see that paragraph 51A, you said that the cost-benefit threshold is not intended to be a lower hurdle. You are going to not say anything about this issue, right? This statement, this...
This is what we had proposed for inclusion in application guidance, but...
In the application guidance.
Yeah, this is what we would say. Like, it's not intended to be a very low threshold. Like, you can't just...
But the introduction of this cost-benefit threshold that you think is... this is a more lower hurdle than the impracticability threshold. That's why we are introducing this one, right?
Yeah, it is definitely lower than impracticable, but it's not such a low hurdle that you...
Oh.
Like, you still have to go through the assessment, justify it, yeah.
So it was not clear. I thought that...
No, correct, yeah.
Don't worry, Chung, I read it three times as well.
Okay, let's round off and have a vote. Stephen and François.
I've got an additional comment, which is quite similar to one of Peter's. So, assuming we go ahead with this, and it kind of seems likely, I hope it's two rather than one, but assuming we go ahead with it, the agenda decisions are intended to be education in nature. That's fine, great stuff. If we put this in, surely we should also be thinking about education on application of cost-benefit within the agenda decision. Could we add something in each agenda decision, particularly on the benefit side? So the cost side, entity specific, although there's obviously going to be a lot of commonality in particular circumstances amongst entities about the cost. But on the benefit side, if there was a case where, as you say in here, the trend information is important and it clearly is very important that it's retrospective, could we have something along the lines of the interpretation committee considers that the benefits use a full retrospective application in this particular case, any voluntary change in accounting policy are particularly significant, or something that would provide perhaps education from the committee about how to think about the cost-benefit test in a particular situation.
What do you think? It's something we can definitely consider and look into. My initial sense is that it's going to be a little difficult to develop something on those lines because it really depends on which alternative company had been applying before and depends on the facts and circumstances. So it might not be an easy task for the committee in each case.
I'm thinking of whether the interpretations committee could provide a signal as to what their expectations are about transition, and that if there was some way of, in the circumstances when it's clear that really retrospective, should be applied, there's a particularly sort of high benefit, whether they could sort of reinforce this, it isn't a low hurdle, or reinforce that it should be a high hurdle to not apply retrospective in a particular situation. And maybe there's a situation, as Peter says, where the retrospective application doesn't really add anything from the investor's perspective. Maybe they could make statements along those lines in those situations which would then make it, which would then perhaps relieve the pressure of each individual company having to go through a detailed cost-benefit assessment themselves, because there's education in the agenda decision itself that would help them make that analysis.
Maybe the safest way to do it, if we, and I think it's worth thinking about, would be to think about whether there's particular considerations. So if you're in this situation and it's going to affect your revenue in every period sort of thing, then maybe that means that there'd be more benefit than if it was, I don't know, relating to BizComs, which might be a one-off type event. So maybe some of the stuff that you had in there about the sorts of things you'd think about when you were thinking about benefits.
Yeah.
Could be used to be particular factors to think about. I don't think we could say, you know, we think in this, the committee could say in this particular case, it will always be the case, but I don't think that's what you're suggesting either.
No, I'm envisioning a paragraph at the end of the agenda decision to address, to provide education on this aspect of the agenda decision.
And
we
all.
Might be
I started this morning by saying that I was welcoming the initiative, I'm sorry that we don't try to have more consistency in our wording, but I don't want to oppose to this. I would ask, however, whether we can have a look whether the misuse of an accounting policy in the definition of an error could not be qualified in a particular way, so that it would suggest that not all misuses lead to an error, and that in itself would diminish the inconsistency. And my inclination was to go to all voluntary changes. That was my inclination, frankly, because if we want to promote improvements, we want to promote improvements wherever they come from. And you already have in IS 8 the fact that a voluntary change is subject to it being an improvement. So my inclination was there. Now I hesitate because the benefit of going to, which is not very glorious, I must say, but to me is that we would include, if we go for alternative 2, restrict the population, by definition we. Implication is that we are going to write in the standard that agenda decision can be voluntary changes. And in a way that brings a bit more clarity and that diminishes the drawback of having words that do not necessarily fit in practice just for pragmatic reasons that are well supported. So that if we can't go any further than that, then I would be for alternative 2, but for the wrong reason.
Okay, on this humorous note, can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
There are two questions, two options.
Yeah. So the first question is whether you agree with the recommendation not to undertake standard setting in relation to corrections of errors and voluntary changes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yes, so everyone except 12. Obviously. Would like to at least insert a word.
Okay, so then the second question asking to amend IAS 8.
And this is focusing on
alternative two.
1, 2, 3.
And abstain from that.
Okay. So does the board agree with the recommendation to provide application guidance on cost and benefit?
So that means we're going with this inexplicit cost benefit.
I think that what I took away from today, but tell me what the board wants us to do, is that we definitely think a consideration of benefits is important in this. We shouldn't have whatever the threshold in application guidance only talk about the cost side. It's very important to talk about the benefit side, and I think that's where we were there. And I think, Sue, that's what you mentioned, even whatever we call it, there was still an undue piece. I mean, I think that after the conversation today, and by the way, even, you know, we had set out some thoughts in the paper about what might be in the application guidance. Even since the committee's discussion last week, we've had a few more thoughts, even particularly around benefits. You know, things like, if you know this change might affect, you know, the next 30 years, in a sense, that would something, you know, that the amount of time the change will affect as well as its magnitude is something to consider. Maybe if the change would only affect comparative periods and wouldn't affect the current period forward, etc. So we've thought about a few more things to think about on the benefit side.
So do you want to bring something back?
I think we could do so. I think we'll look at that, take that all into account, knowing we'll definitely have a consideration of benefits, but maybe we call it something different.
In what you bring back then, could you also consider where else we have used those words?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Because I think by defining those words or providing guidance, we're defining it wherever it's used.
It's going to be all over 9 and 17
apartments. Which is why maybe we call the threshold something different and you know, so that we don't have unintended consequences for other cases.
Tom?
Stephen was first.
Well, I give you the floor.
Okay.
I talk too much.
A small you want to always save the best for last. I think just as it's worded, I was in favor, but a lot of these things are nuanced. And as it's worded, it says costs and benefits of the change. One of the things that came up in our discussion was the costs and benefits of the change and the costs and benefits of doing it retrospectively. And I think you should be very careful when you write up to make those
Absolutely.
Distinctions, and you need to think about both.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
Stephen.
Sorry. You should be on to 10 years.
In the cost benefit, in the application guidance, are you thinking of examples?
Is that a leading question? Do you want them to think of examples?
Yeah, I would like to think of examples, because Peter's example of something affecting business combinations is very different from something that affects the revenue number. And the assessment of benefits would be entirely different in those two situations. So bringing that out in some way, whether it's an example or whether it's more guidance that mentions some of these issues or things you might want to consider.
So what I pictured...
I understand you're going to bring back something on
yeah,
this.
So we can bring back something that expands more what the threshold is and what application guidance.
But wait, what will no longer be there to...
I agree, you know, we should discuss cost-benefit, you know, in the discussions. But I will be hesitate to ask the interpretation committee to put many paragraphs in the agenda decision from case by case. Because in the past, we're struggling on whether we should discuss cost-benefit in the standards. I think the current practice mainly pushed by European Commission. And we're sometimes struggling whether we should put these discussions in the basis or in a separate document. Agenda decision quite short, you know, outcome. And I don't feel it is so useful, you know, or practical to ask the interpretation committee to analyze, you know, this way, another from benefit side. I don't want to say, you know, the interpretation committee should not discuss. They can discuss through the agenda papers, but ask them to put more words, more paragraph on the agenda decision, I don't think it's a good idea.
But I think that all Steve was suggesting, if I understood him correctly, and don't let me put words in your mouth, is that, for example, to say because this agenda decision affects the revenue line item where trend information is important for investors, that should be taken into consideration when you assess the cost-benefit analysis. So just a statement like that, as opposed to getting into detailed cost-benefit analysis like we do when we do standard setting.
Education and how to think about it.
I will not say this is not useful, but if we go that road, then any time when you make agenda decision, people come to us to clarify the benefits, and we were struggling, you know, from this case to another.
Well, if we struggle, then how are the companies going to do it?
But if you're doing it from time to time, it is even more difficult than to judge. Yeah. If you do it for some, for others not, in revenue, cost, money, I think it is very, very difficult if you start to do some and not others.
Okay, well, staff will bring something back on question 4, we don't need to vote, obviously.
Yeah. And the other thing, just to say, is I heard a couple of people mention just that sort of timing question, and we'll see if there's anything we can bring back in a paper as well that talks about.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a break until 25:02.